White Rocket Entertainment.
White Rocket Entertainment, podcast number 301.
I'm Brendan Marcello, and you're listening to the AU Wishbone.
A miracle had turned to hair! A miracle had turned to hair!
And according to my sources, it's an almost credible sports discussion.
They're not going to keep him off the field tonight!
On the War Eagle Sports Radio Network.
We welcome you to Jordan Hare Stadium for tonight's game.
Chris Davis takes it in the back of the end zone.
Let's watch some football. Now everybody. Come on, everybody.
They're not going to keep him off the field tonight.
Yeah, yeah, yeah. Yo, yo, yo. Let's watch some football.
Hello. Welcome to the AU Wishbone, brought to you by White Rocket Entertainment, in association with the WarEagleReader.com and the War Eagle Sports Radio Network, and by people like you, the Auburn family, and the AU Wishbone family via Patreon.com. I'm Van Allen Plexico, and I'm joined as always by my co-host.
I'm John Ringer.
And we're joined tonight by two more co-hosts for a special appearance, two big Auburn fans with connections to our show. We welcome aboard Delvin Williams of the Long Box Crusade. Welcome aboard, Delvin.
Hey, thanks for having me.
Very excited. And also we have our own Jared Albrick of our On Her Majesty's Secret podcast and Comics with Normies, among other shows that we do. Welcome back aboard, Jared, and aboard the Wishbone for the first time.
I am thrilled to be on the Wishbone because I believe in Auburn and love it.
There you go. There you go. Well, we've got a four-man show. I don't know how often we've done that in the past on the Wishbone, and if maybe ever. But we've got a big win from Saturday to talk about, and we're going to look ahead to our attempt to finally win a game down in Baton Rouge for the first time this millennium, which bugs me terribly to have to say that. We've had some incredibly bad luck down there. So first off, let's go around the room. Let's have our guests come aboard first. The Ole Miss game, we usually do our general thoughts and feelings from having seen the most recent game. So, Delvin, what did you see in the Ole Miss game? What did you think about it? What did you take from it?
Well, I know going into the game, I heard pundits and everything. They're like, this game is going to be a blowout. And I read about, like, the Ole Miss beat writer said that he expected, like, a 44-7 game. And I was like, wow, really? Okay. I thought Auburn's done well in the past few weeks. And, you know, then we came to the game and – the first half went about as well as you could possibly expect. I mean, they just walked it. They didn't look very challenged by Ole Miss at all. And defensively, they looked just as stellar as we've seen them look, you know, the entire year. It was, you know, by the third quarter, you weren't even thinking, you know, hey, can Auburn lose this game? It was more like, okay, how much is Auburn going to win by? Mm-hmm. Is Malik Willis going to be able to get in and play? You know, this is – it was – refreshing to see that Auburn took a game that they were supposed to win and they took care of business early so that the game wasn't even in doubt.
I totally agree. Jared, what would you add to his comments?
The biggest takeaway is kind of where Delvin ended it there, is I yearn for Auburn football games where I can sit back, relax, smoke a cigar, laugh like a Chappelle show style laugh, just like and just laugh and laugh. But no, those are so few and far between for us. I swear, you know, Mercer plays this close, and I have to sit there and sweat. But the Ole Miss game, Delvin really hit the nail on the head. Just it was good to see us go in, take control, do what we had to do for essentially four quarters of football. We came off it a little bit in the end. We can talk about that later. But what was an interesting perspective for me was, as you know, Van, I was doing my art thing at a Comic-Con this weekend, so I couldn't watch it live. So I mm-hmm. told you specifically to text me score updates. Mm-hmm. And then my phone was like, bloop, 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 bloop. And I was like, huh, okay.
That's a good thing, as long as it's the good bloops and not the bad
bloops. Yeah, it wasn't like the
not the bad that's not good.
No.
No, but that was it was tough that finally we get one of these like kickback relax games. I mean, Missouri was kind of kickback relax, but we didn't know that going into it. There were still a lot of question marks. This one I didn't quite get to enjoy live and kickback relax because the Auburn gods hate me, but they love me enough to give us a good W, so yeah. I will take it.
Well, the other thing about the Missouri game, it was like 8,000 degrees. I was too busy baking to
it was so hot.
Yeah, and Delvin, by the way, I wanted to tell you, I sure wish that I had known you were there before the game, because I was telling Jared, we were just sitting around for like 3 hours at the stadium, bored to death before the game started. We could have so hung out.
I went to the tailgate, and it wasn't much warmer there. Like it's like, hey, we're in the shade, it's good. Oh, it's shade baked by the sun.
Yeah, I never even saw the big Auburn tailgate. We got to everywhere but there, I think.
I mean, it was a heck of a tailgate for what it was worth. I mean, anybody you could think of stopped by. Albie stopped by. I got a high five from him twice. I felt pretty special. You know, Bruce Pearl came by. Butch Thompson was there. Jacobs was there.
Yeah,
like a lot of people stopped by there because. The St. Louis Club threw the whole thing on. They're looking for folks to come back, you know, to the Auburn-Missouri basketball game, I think, in February. So it was a whole to-do, but it was hot. Goodness gracious, was it hot.
It was hotter in Missouri than it was in Alabama that day.
Yeah, oh, it was insanely hot. We got our tickets through the St. Louis-Auburn Club. We just didn't decide to go. Since there were four of us, it was going to be quite a bit of money to go to their tailgate. And I just figured, you know, we'd rather roam around anyway. But, of course, we ended up going to the Tiger Walk. And by the time that was over, we had like 2.5 hours to kill. So we were just sitting inside the stadium. John, so I want to get your thoughts and feelings on the game. And then we're going to turn it from there to what you thought about the second half. And should we be worried or should we be like, no big deal, John? So what do you think, those two things?
I was very happy with the game as everybody else was. It was nice to have an Auburn game that we're chewing our fingernails. And we really, I think the team came out and executed on both sides at a very high level and really kind of took it to Ole Miss. I think Auburn scored touchdowns the first five times it had the ball.
Yeah.
And that's what you want. I mean, that when that's happening, you're like, okay. And I think there were some things we had been worried about the past couple of weeks in the running game, and we ran the ball better. I was very happy to see that. We can talk about the letting off the gas in the second half and keeping players in too long and that kind of stuff. But overall, I was very, very, very happy with that game. Some Auburn fans were really upset about the second half and stuff. And you should be way more happy with that result than you should be upset about the second half.
Yeah, Gus didn't seem terribly upset after the game. The reporter, I think it was Cole Kublik, asked him something the effect of, you know, are you concerned? He just laughed. It's like, nah, you know, because I get the sense that they pulled just like against Missouri, they started putting the second and third string defensive players in very early on in the second half. And, you know, I tweeted from Missouri that I thought that I recognized several water boys out there playing defense in the second half. So I think that's kind of what we had again. Because
I actually took some snaps in the second half.
I thought that was you out there. Yeah, you didn't cover that big receiver very well, Jared.
No, I wasn't ready, but I was there.
But they have some big, good old receivers, and so you know they can score some points if they if you're not Alabama playing like you know your fourth string 5-star defensive players instead of your first string 5-star defensive players. So Delvin and then Jared, what I mean is there anything we should take from the second half, or is it just you know you're on cruise control and whatever?
At my absolute pessimistic, I would say, you know, you got to make sure that you have your focus, you know, on for 60 minutes. You know, that old cliche, but I mean, it's a cliche, but it's pretty true at the same time, because, you know, this coming week we got LSU, and you know, let's say that, you know, somehow, you know, the football gods are smiling on us and we got up big on LSU, you know, would you want us to like start, you know, putting in subs and, you know, easing back on the gas? Absolutely not. Like, you know, we better, if we have our foot on our necks, go ahead and push it to the ground, you know, but that's the most pessimistic I can get.
Yeah.
I could tell that the energy level shifted, you know, in the second half, where, you know, the team was, you know, seemed like they were happy enough with the results, you know, that they could let everybody, like, you know, carry on, you know, rest up, and for the most part, and, you know, that they didn't have to play Cam Petway. So, and the defense got most of a rest too. I think I'm not too worried about it.
Well, let's follow up on that. Cam Petway didn't play. He had, the week before against Mississippi State, he had like 5 carries for 6 yards. We have yet to see the Cam Petway of pre-Vanderbilt. And I mean, what do you make of that, and what will this team be like if we could get him back?
Oh, man. Well, you know how I we'll get this later, how I do sort of the Marvel Comics heroes represent the team.
Yes.
Right now, and like I said, we'll get into this a little later, we're playing at a really high level, and to get Cam back at that high level would be like, gosh, like the Hulk after he drank like 6 gallons of Mountain Dew, you know.
He'd
be like Hulk smash, but you know, I want to clean the Avengers Tower. Let's clean the tower. Who wants to clean the tower? But I want to smash, clean the tower. That would, like, it'd be nuts. I just, like everybody else, it hurts my heart that we really haven't seen him since, like you said, game, which I was at, by the way. Well, it was fun for a while.
So you jinxed it? That's what you're saying?
How about, hey, Williams.
Sorry. Go ahead.
Wait your turn.
what an offense this would be if we had the passing game we have now, if Kerryon's playing the way he is now, and we could put Petway out there doing his...
Well, we got a cage strong enough to hold an animal like you here. What are you? Some kind of doomsday machine, boy.
That's what I want back. I want my doomsday machine back out there. I want the defenses to be respecting the passing game, respecting our receivers that are coming on, respecting Kerryon doing what he does, and then all of a sudden here comes Petway blasting up the middle for 15 yards. I mean, that we would have a chance in every game left into the postseason if we had that complete package show up. John,
I think it's coming. Oh, I'm sorry.
Oh, yeah, you're right. John, do you think we're going to see that complete package this year? And if so, what new buttons will I have to add to the soundboard?
I can't help you with that last part, but
right.
I mean, I don't know everything that's wrong with him. He's clearly, you know, not close to 100%, and so, but it's also the team is playing at a really high level, and so we have the luxury of putting him on ice until he gets to 100%.
Golly. Yes.
Because we're going to, you know, we have those two huge games coming at the end of the season. And so, like, I'd love for him to be healthy, for example, for the Arkansas game. When we're on the road there, we could just go in and, you know, hand the ball off to him and he could, you know, run over them again. You know, but that's a few weeks from now, so that's possible. In the A&M game, but you know, if he's not 100% in those games, I would be okay with literally sitting him until the Georgia game if we had to.
I am so fired up to jump on that point. I don't know about you guys, but I am so sick and tired of Georgia having like a superstar, amazing running back who gets like put on suspension or gets injured early in the season, and then they have their big comeback game.
Yep.
And when is it always?
It's always.
Who are they always playing for their big comeback? Us.
It's what,
it'd be so nice to flip that around.
As their announcer
that's
says.
That's a great point.
Oh my God!
Exactly. Every year. But I'm just so, I just see, I feel like right now, the way Auburn's playing right now, us against Georgia at home will be a very even, tough game that we have a chance to win. But I feel like if we had Petway back playing like he did the first half of last year on top of everything else we have right now, we would kick Georgia's tail in.
That's what I want to see.
Oh.
They would have an extraordinarily hard time stopping us. I mean, if you already have, you know, Kerryon doing his thing, and
yes,
he's been amazing,
yes,
the last three games, just amazing.
Yeah.
And, you know, I heard that Petway had plantar fasciitis. You know, I'm a big guy myself, and I've had a little bit of plantar fasciitis, and it's the worst.
Mm.
And that's me doing maybe like a little bit of running, like a mile and a half with no one chasing me and tackling me. A PT test. This isn't somebody, you know, diving at my legs, diving at me, trying to tackle me every play. I really wish that they didn't run him 30 some odd times against Mercer. That didn't help matters. You know, the first, you know, the next college football team I coach is my first, you know, so I'm not questioning that, but I mean, but
I have no problem with that.
Right. You know, like, well, I try to be humble about it, but you're right. Like, I was sitting there like, oh my God, like, why do they keep running this dude? He clearly isn't healthy. It was almost like he was hitting the line and just falling over and getting back up, rinse, repeat.
Yep.
And so, yeah, I mean, if he came back against Georgia, you know, close to full strength, yeah, it'd be like, you know, when Todd Gurley came back.
Yes,
you know,
that's a name I couldn't remember. It was Todd Gurley.
Oh, geez. Oh, mm-hmm. Yeah, that was the worst. He rushed for like 800 yards. It was terrible.
He rushed the kickoff back.
Like, it was
the kickoff.
I mean, he looked like friggin' Herschel Walker out there. It was insane. But yeah, it would be great if Petway came back like that. Because I mean, if you have, I mean, just imagine the possibilities. It makes me think about like Ronnie and Caddy in the backfield.
And I was thinking the exact same thing, Devin. That's exactly what I was thinking. Is you'd have the thunder and lightning just like that.
Yes.
Oh.
Yeah. Yeah, I mean, could you imagine like Cam like lining back up at like, you know, H-back, as you know, and then having Petway behind him and the options that you can have from that? Oh my God.
Exactly. Tell us, when I hear plantar fasciitis, I think that a peanut company has gone far right wing. So explain to us what it actually means.
Man, I'm no doctor, but like what I do know is, yeah, like the bottom of your foot is, yeah, like you have tissue called the fascia,
okay,
and it gets all bunched up, and like it keeps trying to stretch itself back out, and when you put like your weight on it, it feels like the bottom of your foot's about to pull apart. It hurts.
Mm.
And I mean, Cam is what, about 6 feet tall? They list them as six foot, about 230. Mm-hmm.
At least,
think about,
yeah,
how much weight that is. And if you think, if you put your full weight on that foot, that, you know, that tissue on the bottom of your foot's about to pull apart.
Oof.
And I mean, and I was told that it starts about like calf level and it goes all the way down, you know, to the bottom of your foot. And so, I mean, if you're having issues dealing with that, and it's a tissue thing that takes a while.
It's a tissue issue.
A tissue issue. Yes. I tried to avoid it, you know.
Just own it.
But it's not an easy thing. If that's what it is, you know, for a big man to have to deal with that, that's unbearably tough. You know, Tim Duncan had to deal with it in the pros a lot. Like, yeah, it's not an easy thing to deal with. It is probably just going to linger, and it could just pop up at any time. You know, resting helps, but you know, if you're somebody like him and you want to play for the team and you're trying to help your pro stock, you want to be out there on the field playing.
Yeah, man. Yeah, I almost wonder if we're going to end up giving him a medical red shirt, bringing him back again, or if he'd even want to do that. I mean, the year he's having right now, he's not going in the NFL in any big hurry, I don't think. So I'm just.
Yeah, I wouldn't think so.
Yeah.
You know, like after last year, rushing for 1,200, you would think that would have been his time, but he's like, nope, I want to come back. And yeah, you know, I. You have to find a spot for him if he wants to come back again next year.
Mm-hmm.
You can't never have too many healthy running backs.
No kidding. Yeah. Oh, if we had both of them come back next year, I mean, yeah, I feel like Kerryon's been on the team about 7 years now, but I think 15 was his freshman year. He just played a lot as a freshman, so he has another year if he wants it.
Yeah, he was, and it's just crazy that he was playing like H-back, like Chandler Cox. It was him and Chandler Cox, right?
Oh, Cam Petway was. I'm talking about Kerryon, yeah. Though. But Kerryon's been on the team since 15, too, so he could come back. So, John, what about Javaris Davis and Horton and Dean? Talk a little bit about what the situation is with them.
Javaris Davis was held out of the game. We don't really know exactly what's going on with him. And, you know, and he's played well this season. So, you know, hopefully he gets back. Dean was just banged up. I think he was fine. He was walking in the sideline after that. And Horton supposedly is fine. But we'll see. The offensive line still did well after he went out, but I think he's played pretty well to this point. He hasn't been great, but he's been solid. So
that's been the offensive line all year, really.
Yeah.
I mean, that sums up the whole offensive line. It hasn't been spectacular like we were kind of hoping, but it's been good enough for when we, you know, had to have it.
And I think, the offensive line as a whole was better this week. But no, I mean, the good news is I don't think any of those are like serious multi-game missing injuries. So
Jamel Dean is the one that always worries me because he's the guy we got from Ohio State, right? And he was injured there had to get over
and,
that.
And missed a year at Auburn after he got to Auburn. It was
still, yeah.
He was in position to start last year and then got hurt. But he's been pretty good.
Let's see. We've talked about the running backs a little bit and Kerryon. I mean, Kerryon is such a complete back. He's such a great blocker, even when he's not completely healthy, and he still hadn't been healthy since like the first play or two of the first game. He has a nose for the end. I've always said that's why he played so much in 15 as a freshman. He has a nose for the end zone. And you know, John, I think you were talking about this last week that he has that ability to kind of stutter step and look for the hole and then blast through it. And he can find find the end zone that way, you know?
Well, and he has patience. Many running backs are just like go 100 miles an hour straight to the hole. And he has the ability to wait for the hole to develop. He can kind of see it coming and then go through it. And there was a play Saturday where a guy beat the left tackle coming. I think it was maybe one of those formations where they brought in Prince Tegan as like the extra blocker. And the guy came in front of him and came like shooting across the hole where Kerryon was. And Kerryon just hesitated like half a second and let the guy go by. And then he went through the hole.
Mm-hmm.
So he's really, really good at that.
Yeah. And he's gotten just bigger and stronger. So he's a little more durable now. And is able to just power. He can be as much a power tailback as he can, you know, a scat back now, which is just impressive. That's sort of the development that we saw from 2012 to 2013 with
Mason.
Yeah, with Trey Mason. Is that in 11 and 12, Trey Mason was still kind of like, you know, he was leaner. But by 2013, he put on enough weight, enough muscle, that he was still really quick. But he could find that hole and blast through it and create his own and break tackles. And that's kind of what we're seeing with Kerryon. These guys are already so fast and quick, and then they just bulk up with enough muscle that they're tougher, they're stronger, and they can power through things. And that makes me very happy. Jared, I want to get your view on our receivers right now. Now, you didn't get to see all this present game, but what's your impression so far about how Stidham and the receivers have been coming around?
I'm very, very impressed. Like you said, I didn't get to see the entirety of the Ole Miss game. I got to see a lot of highlights, so it was kind of like a Kerryon show. highlight reel.
Yeah.
Yeah, he sniffs out the end zone like I can sniff out a Taco Bell. It's miles away.
True.
That's a fact. He knows that. But the receiving core has really, really impressed me because frankly, I don't know about you guys, but my point of view, it's been years for me since I've been like excited when the quarterback drops back and you can see he's doing his reads and there's a few seconds he's like, oh, this is going to be a pass play. And now I'm like, this is going to be sweet. And days gone by, I'd be like, oh, God, it's a pass. Oh, Lord. Oh, man. No, please don't pass the ball. Don't get sacked. But now all of a sudden, I'm getting more of this confidence. I'm sure the team is feeling more of this confidence. What the heck is up with Will Hastings? He's like superhero now, which I'm loving. the entire receiving core is just been – I haven't been this excited about, like, the passing game since – I guess 13. We did pretty good on passing in 13, but I really liked it in 04 with, like, yeah. Courtney Taylor catching everything.
Oh, well, Jason Campbell finally had an offensive coordinator in 14, in 04, yeah. I've got another question for you, Devin, but first, John, I want to get your follow-up on that. Particularly that we saw Nate Craig Myers emerge a little bit finally as a threat in this game. What did you see about him and anybody else you want to mention about the receivers? Because I felt like this was the first game where Nate Craig Myers was in multiple plays doing stuff, at least for part of the game.
He was. I mean, they were clearly targeting him to get him the ball, and he's open. He makes plays. I mean, he blocks really well when he's not getting the ball. You could see a couple times in this, he made a great block all the way downfield on that Ryan Davis long screen pass for the touchdown.
Oh, yeah.
Where he hustled
the blocking,
took a guy out.
The blocking on that play was so good all the way down the field.
It was, and Will Hastings hustled down the field and made the last block. And so that was, that kind of thing is exciting to see. And I think, I mean, Craig Myers obviously has a lot of talent, and we're just barely scratching the surface of it with him. I think he could do a lot more. But I think it's also like the guy that we forget about all the time, but is the number one receiver by a mile is Ryan Davis.
Yep.
This little guy.
Oh, yeah.
He catches a lot of short passes, but he's productive.
Mm-hmm. He is. Well, I mean, because Kyle Davis is supposed to be so much, of a talent, and yet he hasn't done a whole lot. He's like the last guy, apparently, to get off the bus in terms of making a splash as a receiver. I mean, they've all sort of made a little bit of a statement now, I think, except for him. Have I missed something, or has Kyle Davis not really done anything yet? He had a pass he missed, right? Or it went over his head, I think.
No, he caught a few.
Yeah, he's kind of been he's going to be a reliable red zone target, too, with that big old body.
Yeah.
I think they've tried it once or twice. They got a pass interference. I don't know whether it was this game or Mississippi State. Where they threw to Kyle Davis and the corner had no chance at all, so he held him and got the pass interference, which got us a first down, like first and two. So, I think he's coming around. I think the receivers are coming around too. I remember the Mercer game. Like I was, starting to question Cody Burns a little bit because it's like, man, come on, the receivers aren't even catching balls. Like that's kind of what wide receivers do, right? They catch.
Last I checked,
yeah. Like I mean, I had to go look in the football dictionary, to make sure, wide receivers, they catch.
That's what they do. Unless we're playing Arkansas in 2015, in which case they don't. But yes, you're right.
Yeah, that was the most impressive thing the last few games from starting out the Missouri game, Kyle Davis on that bomb. Right, first play of the game, to set the trend, or
that's right.
They're making Stidham's life easier. You get less antsy as a quarterback if you know that, hey, when I sit in the pocket and make my throws, you're going to catch them. Like one of the very first plays of the very first game, can't remember who he played. You could tell they set it up, and this was going to be like that pretty play. Instead, him dropped back in the pocket, threw this beauty of a ball to Slayton, hit Slayton right in the numbers, and he drops it.
Yep.
And when you do that, your quarterback's like, uh-oh, what's going on? And the receiver's doubting himself, and something got fixed, clearly, to where Stidham's looking more comfortable in the pocket now. When he's running with more of a purpose. As opposed to just looking like he's scared because the line isn't going to protect him. Everything's just looking a little more comfortable, and they seem to have a little bit more of a rapport going. It's nice.
Yeah, I agree. And Delvin, while we're talking, there's another player I'm very excited about, and I want to get your thoughts on him. Malik Willis.
Ooh.
Yes. I vote yes.
You look at him, and I want to see him pass a little bit more. Of course, you know what? That's a fan, right? Like, dude runs like a freaking Impala, and I'm like, I want to see him pass more. But But he you know, like he's number 14, right?
That's it.
Yes.
I'm like, did Nick Marshall like go in the future, have a kid, bring him back, drop him back?
Now, see, I thought you were going to say, you know, I see that number 14 out there at quarterback. You know what I'm thinking, guys? Randy Campbell. Ben Leard. He looks like Ben Leard. No, that's not who we're talking about.
He does not look like Ben Leard.
He does not look like Ben Leard at all.
Hey. In fairness, if he throws like Ben Leard and runs like Nick Marshall, hey.
That'll work. I'll take it.
That would be awesome.
That would be very nice.
I'd take that all day. Like, it's great that he's able to come in and get consequence-free reps.
Yeah.
You know, but against, you know, major competition, because a lot of times he's going at least against like second string out there, and these are SEC opponents. You know, hopefully, you know, let's, you know, knock on all the wood in the world, Stidham stays upright, he's completely healthy.
Yeah.
But in case he's not, you know, it's a good thing that Willis has a few reps. He gets to understand the pace of a game. And of course, I'm sure the coaches have told him, you know, even though he's a true freshman, he needs to be ready because he's next man up. And running the ball, man, it was just like Nick Marshall. Like, if, you know, if you're on the end and you want to, like, just creep in just a little bit too much, bye. He's gone.
Yeah.
Mistake. Can't do it. And that opens up all sorts of things. I noticed that. I think I heard one of the commentators say, you know, with Stidham, since he's not much of a runner, they use that zone read and they'll just do a quick pass
right
to the wide receiver or running back to just pass by, which works just as well.
Right.
But with Willis, he's doing it with his legs, and he's so fast that, you know, he's already in the secondary. So he's exciting to watch, even as a true freshman, just starting to get it. I like watching him.
Yeah. I there's been a couple of reporters have asked Gus, are you putting in like a package, right? Will there be the Malik Willis package for when we need that kind of a threat? And Gus has not said a word yet about it. He's just kind of laughs or whatever, you know. He says, well, he's coming along. He looks good. I'm wondering if we're going to see, like we did years ago with Damian Craig when Pat Nix was the quarterback or, you know, et cetera, et cetera. There's been times. And I'm really wondering if.
Probably not this year. You know, I mean, that's a lot to ask for a true freshman. Like, I mean, I would say I hate to bring up this name, but I kind of hate to bring up this name. You know, if he's like a Tebow, yes. You know, you put in that package, you know. But do we need him to do that, especially with Stidham being still relatively new, even though he has, like, you know, more chops since he's the JUCO transfer? No. Let Stidham get as many meaningful reps as he can and let him get as much – of a flow as he can. Don't worry about the package thing. We don't need it this year. Personally, I don't think we do.
John, any thoughts on the offense before we turn to the defense? And I'll mention Carlson in just a second.
No, honestly, the only thing to comment I have is I wish they had played Malik Willis more on Saturday. They waited until late in the fourth quarter to put him in. I wish he had gotten a couple more series and we'd gotten Stidham out of there earlier. To be ultimately successful, we need Stidham to be healthy this season. But I, you know, like this week, Justin Field, who's like the number one recruit and the number one quarterback in Georgia, committed to Georgia.
Ugh.
And he was considering Auburn, and we were definitely in the contention for him. And I was unhappy about it. But at the same time, I feel like, you know, Stidham may be around. He may go to the NFL. He could be here another year or two. But I also feel pretty good about Malik Willis
and Joey Gatewood
being kind of Joey Gatewood behind him, but kind of Malik Willis being the, you know, the next Auburn quarterback in line for the next couple of years. I feel pretty good about that.
Yeah, I do too. I want to point out Daniel Carlson is now the all-time leading scorer in SEC history. We talked about that the last couple of weeks that might be coming. His I'm knocking on wood right now. His extra point streak is continuing too. So he's really close now to breaking the record for that, too. When he leaves Auburn, if everything stays the way it is now, he will be, arguably the greatest kicker. You want SEC history? Auburn history for sure. And we've had a lot of really good kickers over the years. It's pretty amazing to get ahead of Byram and all those other guys that we've had over the Parkey, you know, and all these other guys. I mean, that's just the last couple before him.
He's the leading scorer in the SEC now.
Yes.
All time.
And you don't have a soundboard thing for that? I mean, what kind of a show am I on here?
And I say you!
There you go. I needed like Beethoven's Ode to Joy covering that. I mean, come on, man. That's big stuff. There we go.
There you go.
All right. Good work.
A miracle in turn to hair.
There you go.
Appreciate it.
Yes. Let's quickly look at the defense, then we're going to turn to LSU. The defense in the first half, they bent a little bit, but I don't have anything really bad to say about them at all. Although I was hearing that there was a reading somewhere that there was like one defensive lineman, and they wouldn't say who it was, that like on one play just kind of fell down on his face, and on another play he just kind of stood there. Did anybody see anything about that? That one of our defensive linemen just was like giving up or just wasn't really putting in any effort? No.
What are you talking about?
That's what I was.
That, well, did Byron Coward get his uniform back?
Oh, ow. Ow!
Nice. Well, no, maybe not. I don't know. When War Room Eagle posts the Auburn defense versus the Ole Miss offense, and we can watch the whole thing in 7 minutes, then I might watch it and just keep an eye on the defensive line and see if I see anybody just like pancakes himself or whatever. But anyway,
I'd be surprised. There's too much competition right now. I wouldn't be out there loafing if I was on that front seven, because you're going to find that bench pretty quickly.
That's right. So any thoughts? Let's go around the horn just quickly. Anybody, any thoughts on the defense? Jared, what do you think?
My initial thought is I think people made way too much of a deal out of, you know, we were the only team that no one had scored born 14 on.
Yeah, that's right.
Then I talked to a couple of my more Eeyore-ish Auburn friends. Oh, I can't believe we didn't keep the streak alive. I'm like, dude, we took the W. We took it handily. It was never in question. We got other guys' reps. I'm okay with it. Yeah, there's my summary.
Delvin, what do you think about the defense?
I think the first half, we did everything we needed to do. They knocked on the door a few times, and as soon as, you know, they thought they were at the foot in the door, we made sure to kick it back out and close the door. You know, kick the field goal. I think they missed the first try, and they got one. And then after that point, you know, they were down already by three possessions, so who cared? The defense, they are answering the call. It is very refreshing to see an Auburn defense do that. And I remember people were saying that, you know, Kevin Steele was a so-so hire.
Mm-hmm.
Huh.
Not anymore. Okay. Not anymore. Right.
If he's so-so, I'll take so-so any dang time.
No, I think Kevin Steele's contract was for $20 and some S&H green stamps. So we got a really good deal.
I backed the Kevin Steele Kickstarter.
Yes, that's right. There was a Kickstarter. Yes. It originally was the Will Muschamp Kickstarter, but they changed it over.
Wait a minute. He's gone? Oh, wait. Change the name.
Change the name of it real
Kevin
fast.
Kevin Steele. It's Kevin Steele Kickstarter.
That was it. John, any defensive thoughts before we look at LSU?
I mean, this. What? You hit the nail on the head. The first half, while the game was in doubt, the starters were in, and the defense played very well. Ole Miss is the other part. I think anybody who's upset about the final defensive numbers, the score, and the yards, it is purely the Alabama effect and the fact that Alabama, you know, blew them out of the stadium the week before.
Yes.
But they had a more of a reason to be angry, because Ole Miss has absolutely torched them for three games in a row.
Yeah.
So it was a personal thing with them. Our defense played very well. The defensive line got great push, got a lot of pressure. The Ole Miss's offense is really good. Like Van said at the opening, they have their receivers are big and talented, and that quarterback is really good, Shea Patterson. He's going to be a real problem for the next couple of years in the SEC, and regardless of the team or the coach or anything else. So we're fine. And again, it's a benefit I've talked about the last couple of games. We played a lot of young defensive guys, a lot of snaps the second half. So we're building a lot of experience in the guys who are backups. In some other years when we've had every single week as a nail biter and you play the starters the whole time, the backups never get in, and then you have, you know, and then the starters leave and you have a bunch of untested guys. And this year, you know, if experience, you know, when the seniors and other experienced guys leave, we're going to have a lot of guys who played a lot of snaps behind them.
That's awesome. Yeah, I agree. Let's do our quick around the horn on LSU. We're playing the 2:30 CBS game. I'd been joking that LSU was playing their way into the permanent 11 o'clock spot, but I was very, very happy that they won, because A, it meant we get the 2:30 the afternoon, not the stupid 11 o'clock death slot, and we don't have to play in the dark the whole game in Tiger Stadium down there at night where all the drunk Cajun lunatics come out. It really is, to me, the perfect time to play LSU. I think I don't know if it was the last time we played LSU at 2:30, but that was a 2010 when we kicked their tails. In the last,
I think was 2015 at 2:30.
Who knows? But I'm happy that they won because of that, and I'm happy that they won because now they're not wounded grizzly bears up against the wall lashing out, you know, at anybody. I'm glad that they can sit back, feel kind of good about themselves. We beat Florida in the swamp. Woo-hoo-hoo. That's how I want LSU feeling. I don't want them to take a whole lot of confidence out of it, but I don't want them wild-eyed, desperate, you know, like a wounded animal. So let's go around the horn. Let's see. Delvin, what are your thoughts on LSU and where things stand going into Baton Rouge this week?
As a quick point of order, I think that Grizzly Bear is an alternate mascot for Ole Miss.
Why not?
Wanted to point that out real quick, but yeah, it's a good thing LSU won. You know, back when, you know, they hired Coach O, I laughed. Seriously. Mm-hmm. I'm like, they hired the substitute teacher. And you never hired a substitute teacher. There's a reason that the dude is a substitute. Mm-hmm. He's not a teacher. He's a terrible coach. He's awful. And sure enough, I mean, you don't have the talent LSU has and lose to Troy unless you do a lot of things wrong.
Yep.
And, yep, he rallied the troops. He got them to come back and beat a Florida team that's not really that good, because I'm pretty sure that offense couldn't score 28 points if you left them in the stadium alone. So I am cautiously confident about the LSU game for that reason. Auburn has – the last few weeks come out and taking care of teams that they're supposed to take care of, whether it's home or away. You know, we got them at a 2:30 slot. You're right. It's not at night where, you know, all the fans won't be, you know, all boozed up. You know, they won't, you know, be tossing the hot dogs around at each other at the same velocity. I think we have a great shot. I'll leave it at that. I think we have a great shot at going in there and doing exactly what we should be doing.
I agree. Jared, LSU.
Like you guys, I'm glad they took care of business against Florida. One of the funniest things I heard today was that once they did that, Troy is now a contender to win the SEC East.
They already were, I think.
But, you know, I agree with you guys. I'm going to steal a phrase that Delvin's used a lot during our friendship when it comes to Auburn football. He likes to say, I like our chances.
Yep.
I like our chances. I feel like if we go in there and take care of business from Jump Street, it's our day to have. What we can't do is go in there and fiddledy-bumble-bum around for, like, the first quarter or even the first half and just kind of – basically, what I'm saying is LSU is the team where if you just let them hang around, mm-hmm. they might just get you. So don't let them hang around. Go in there, hammer down, take care of business. Like I said, I like our chances, though.
The way that we lose to LSU in Baton Rouge is often that they come out and smack us in the face in the first quarter, and we can't ever quite get back. So I agree completely. John, LSU and Matt Canada's offense in particular, what are you thinking about that? Yeah, I know you have that.
The great thing about Auburn being the noon game is I got to scout all the other SEC teams after that and watch a bunch of – so I watched a bunch of LSU Florida. I watched a bunch of everybody else that were going to play the rest of the year. Mm-hmm. And there was this big controversy last week because Coach O wasn't letting Matt Canada call his actual offense, and he let him this week. And what we saw was, you know, the stuff that he ran at Pitt and NC State. They shift before every play. They move wide receivers and tight ends, and the offensive linemen shift one side to the other and that kind of stuff. And then they ran, and this would shock all, you know, Auburn people, a bunch of jet sweeps and a bunch of speed sweeps, and they had way more yardage on the ground from their wide receivers than their running backs against Florida.
Mm-hmm.
So that, you know, that was the thing that bit Florida, but Florida's linebackers are kind of young and untested and not very good at this stage and inexperienced, and I don't think that's going to work the same way against Auburn's linebackers. I think they're going to be standing there waiting on that guy. Yeah. So, you know, Geis, the running back, was supposed to be an all-world guy this year, and he's been banged up some and hasn't been – he's been solid but not good. And the bottom line is their passing game is the same. Like, they have the same bad quarterback that can't throw the ball, and it's a problem for them. Mm-hmm. Here's their I actually looked up some numbers to prepare for this. They played three good teams, okay? And in this case, I'm going to count – Troy and not Syracuse is a good team. They played Mississippi State, Troy, and Florida. Okay. In those games, they passed the ball 77 times. They completed 55% of their passes for 175 yards a game, two touchdowns, one interception. They're averaging 6 yards of completion, basically. That's not very good.
No.
That's not.
And here's the other one that I really like. Against those three teams, they were bad at stopping the run, and their run stats actually look pretty good because they played BYU, who's one of the worst teams in Division I this year. They played UT Chattanooga, and they played Syracuse, who's a Big 12 spread passing team that's terrible at running the ball. So overall, the LSU run defense stats look good. But between Mississippi State, Troy, and Florida, those teams average 5.5 yards a carry against LSU.
Oof.
Wow. So
don't disrespect UT Chattanooga. Everybody loves the Dolphins.
Dolphins.
Fighting footwear. The mock pitch. Yeah, I don't know.
Moccasins?
Quality foot. They're the UT Chattanooga quality footwear. Go ahead.
So, you know, I do think Auburn's running game is going to continue to get well. And I think y'all are right. Like, we cannot let them hang around and have hope. We need to jump on them with both feet. Mm-hmm. And, you know, it's a place where you're right. Auburn has gone down there in the past, and at the beginning of the game kind of let it get away from us.
Yep.
Let LSU set the tone. And even in 2013, that's kind of what happened. So we need to go about it the other way. But I think this team has been on the road a couple times. They're in a good place offensively, and I think the defense can handle LSU and can really stop them. I mean, we can stop LSU running the ball, and I'm not scared of them throwing the ball.
Yeah. No, I agree. All right. Gentlemen, I think we're going to go into our break here, so I'm going to cut our two guests loose. We appreciate you guys coming on board very much, and we'll see you guys down the road. Delvin, thanks a bunch, man.
Hey, thank you for having me. I really I enjoyed it. War Eagle.
Well, War Eagle. Glad to have you. Jared,
War Eagle.
We'll see you on the next show that you're on, and maybe we'll get Delvin back on again at some point, too, for one of our White Rocket shows. Might be cool.
Yeah, I'd love to.
You got it. All right, guys. We'll see y'all later. John and I got to do a little business right quick, so make that little noise. Make that little noise. All right, John, you still with me?
I'm here.
All right. We got to thank our patrons right quick. This is how our show stays on the air and continues to grow. And we just hit 140,000 downloads on this show, not even counting the Wargle Sports Radio Network. And that is through Patreon.com. Just go to Patreon, patreon.com, and you can do /Van Allen Plexico or just search Plexico in their little search box. It'll come right up to me. And we have to thank the people that have already done that. That includes Nicholas Cottrell and Joseph Fine, as well as Mick Vigicana, Timothy, Mike Finley, David Medinas, Mark Squire, Earl Ricks, Dave Powell, Jared Albrick, who was just on the show.
War Eagle. I didn't get to say goodbye, War Eagle.
Oh, well, War Eagle. you came in just at the right moment as I was calling your name.
I know. I planned it. I waited patiently. I called back in.
Very clever.
Since you like delving, get to say goodbye.
Oh, I didn't even realize.
Me and my hurt feelings are going to go now.
All right, man. We appreciate it. It was awesome.
I'll get you guys later.
All right, Jared.
Bye, Jared.
Rich Reimer, Michael Kirschner, Bill Matthews, Joey Miller, Matthew Wagstaff, Russell Milling, Dan Thompson, Chris Thrash, Wes Atkinson, J.W. Rice, Steve Harlan, Phil Amthor of WeHaveDonuts.com, Randall Walker, C.T. Wayne, Richard Stevens, Andrew Barber, and Neil Dyer and Wardam Wade, as well as our one-time anonymous donors. All right, and we're getting so close to the to our goal that we set for ourselves, but we still have a little bit ways to go. So go to patreon.com and just you can hook it up real easy. All right, John, I think we should just hit our best of our listener questions before I get in trouble tonight for being on too long. So let us see what the mailbag has.
All right. Are you ready?
Yes.
First question is from Theodore Roosevelt, who says, Mr. President, if you could add any any Auburn player throughout history to this year's team, excluding Cam or Bo, who would it be?
Any player from Auburn history to this year's team?
Yes.
Ronnie Brown.
I disagree. I would pick with this team, a great offensive lineman, you know, and particularly a tackle, maybe like Willie Anderson, something like that.
I like it.
All right. Next question. Chris Thrash says, I can't remember an SEC season with so many blowouts. Auburn, Bama, and Georgia are clearly the class of the league. What do you think accounts for the disparity? The talent gap shouldn't be that broad between the top three and the rest of the league.
No, I think the talent gap is that big. I think it's exactly what it is.
But why is it that big? Is it coaching? Is it recruiting?
Because Alabama and Auburn have been recruiting at top 10 levels. Georgia's been recruiting lately at that level. And then you put in the right coaching and the right scheme and the right coaches. And, yeah, I mean, Auburn could have been that way the last 3 or 4 years if we'd had, like, that one piece that got away from us every year, and it was a different piece every year. One year it was like the defense was kind of collapsing. One year it was quarterback play, you know. We've got all of our pieces kind of working right now, except maybe a power running game, but we'll get that back too or get it going. So, and other teams, they just don't have all those pieces. They just don't. I mean, they're missing something here or missing something there. I mean, how do you see it?
I think that's some of it, but I also think, like, I think quarterback recruiting is a big one. I think there's a lot of programs that Florida's the perfect example. Had bad quarterback play. And LSU's another one. Like, if those teams had good quarterbacks, they'd be fine. But LSU hasn't had a good quarterback, you know, since 2007. And Florida hasn't had a good quarterback in, like, 5 years. So
if you combined Ole Miss and Florida, you'd have an East contender alongside Georgia.
Sure. All right, next question from Wardam Wade. He says, in the first half, he thought the defense seemed a little flat. More missed tackles we're used to seeing, and Patterson's quick throws seemed to neutralize our pass rushers. Although they didn't score a lot, they moved the ball.
Yeah.
What do you attribute the poor tackling to, and do you think there's a blueprint for how to move the ball against our defense?
Now, I think they just had a good passing game, and I think we were a little off and a little flat. It was the 11 o'clock game. It was all the stuff we talked about. And I think when you add all that together, they were able to get some yards. And I hope that it wasn't a deceptive first half where everything just kind of bounced our way. And, I mean, even the start
of the – It wasn't.
Even the start of the second half, we ran the kickoff back to, like, their 30, but then we lost a yard on the entire drive. So it's like I don't know. I mean, I just feel like things were kind of rolling our way in the first half. And, you know, eventually – but, yeah, there were some issues on defense that hopefully it was just a matter of that particular game and that time.
We saw this last year also. I think they're – the way Kevin Steele coaches defense, they do not want to give up the big play ever. We're like the best team in the country at preventing the big play and preventing other teams from scoring once they get on our side of the field.
Right.
So part of it is when you're doing that, you're going to give up some of this underneath stuff. And right. Ole Miss is so far ahead of every other SEC team throwing the ball this year that there isn't anything anybody else is going to copy. I mean, if we played Oklahoma State or Oklahoma again, then we might have that problem. But other than them, I'm not worried about it. I mean, because no other – let me tell you what. You know who's last in the league in passing? Georgia. Mm. Okay? That kid isn't going to do that to us. So I'm not – wow. There was one play in the Ole Miss game when a receiver was wide open and there almost wasn't a defender in the picture. And that's the first time that's happened this year. We're on game five or six. So.
Yeah, six, yeah.
All right, next question from Reynolds Wolf.
Like an unwanted neighbor that comes over and visits.
From the Weather Channel, Reynolds Wolf.
Thundersnow.
I just love it.
He says, why do you think historically Auburn often stumbles in the huge big stage early season contest seem to be a lingering problem that spans across a peppering of decades of coaching staffs? Mm. Here are a few infuriating examples. 1984 loses season opener against Miami in the Meadowlands.
Texas 83. Go back even further. 2018.
That's true. 2003 loses to USC and Jordan-Hare.
Nebraska 82. Go back a little further, Reynolds. Nebraska 82. We got blown out with Bo.
That's it. And all they weren't season openers, but the last year and this year Clemson games.
Yep.
Yes, I know there have been exceptions, but the historical trend seems to be that our squads and coaches have to find themselves at some point in the season before they get cranking. Meanwhile, a team with the same state boundary whose name rhymes with Framalama Frimson Fried always seems highly tuned long before their trade their hues and the stadium's turnstile starts spinning. Why do you think this happens?
Yeah, well, to me, it's because Alabama, if I was supposed to say their name, they base their success on having just a bunch of big five-star, you know, solid players, depth at every position. They're not doing a lot of sophisticated stuff historically. They just pound away at you. You can do that in game one, whereas Auburn is doing stuff that utilizes schemes and techniques and stuff more, and it takes a little bit longer, I think, for that to gel. That's how I've always seen it.
I think that's a good answer. There's something about this particular coaching staff that it seems to take longer than it should that drives everybody crazy, but
yeah.
I think that's a good answer. Yeah. And his second question is, who is Auburn's doppelganger? He says, his vote is from Michigan State, began as an agricultural school, raucous and friendly fan base, and they have a lovely pastoral campus. And their biggest rival is the overwhelming favorite in the state, receives fawning coverage from the media. 8% of their fans had never been to Ann Arbor or could not find it on a map, and is loathed by the 20% that actually has some affiliation with the university. And he says, second choice would be Oklahoma State for same reasons as above.
Huh. Yeah.
And he says, I can't believe we're midway through the season. So depressing.
I know. I pointed out that we would have five of our games done before the end of September and the season would be almost half over and people were telling me to shut up. It used to be Texas A&M, but now they're in the same division as us, so we can't say that anymore, right? I mean, that used to be the one we'd point to. But, yeah, there are a few. I mean, technically, we should be Florida State, but no, we're not Florida State by any means at all. No.
I'll put a plug in for Virginia Tech since I have some ties to that school now. I mean, it's a lot more remote than Auburn, but they're kind of the land grant, strong core of cadets, agriculture engineering school, and I think some of the values are kind of the same. So
yeah, that's cool.
All right, next question. Jonathan Stubbs says, originally Van said Auburn had to win one of three games, LSU, Bama, and Clemson, and win all other nine, including Georgia, to have a successful season. Mm-hmm. If we lose those three and win the others, again, go 9-3, then Gus can stay, but he's still on thin ice. What if Auburn beats LSU but loses to Georgia, Bama, and Clemson? Is that enough for Gus to stay?
If we beat LSU but lose to Clemson, Georgia, and Alabama?
Yes.
With this team, the way it's going now that we know how good Georgia is, and we didn't fully appreciate it before when I said that originally, I have Georgia up there almost with Alabama now and Clemson in terms of, dang. So I'm now more like I want to see us be competitive in those games. If we get blown out in those other two, if we beat LSU but get blown out by Georgia and Alabama, then I'm like 51-49, make a change. But if we play like we did against Clemson, but smarter in all three of those games and win at least one of them, I'm probably going to stay. I'll stand pat. Stay with what we got.
The biggest thing is you cannot have the offensive futility. You right. can't have that feeling of like our offense is punchless in those two games.
You can't have that feeling that my grandmother could call a better game than what's being called right now.
Well, it's not just that. It's that feeling like we had it at Georgia and Alabama last year and yeah. then we had at Clemson this year where, like, you know, there was literally nothing we could do to right. move. You know what I'm saying?
Yeah.
Like,
yeah.
that will be a problem.
Yeah.
All right, moving on. Question from Justin Parker.
Yeah.
Do you think Auburn will be a bigger challenge now that LSU has beaten Florida? Can our offensive line keep Arden Key away? I think that
good.
It turned to the second question. Like we do not want to get in 3rd and 10 in Baton Rouge and have them coming after us. So that's going to be a problem. So running the ball, stay ahead of the chains, and throwing the ball on first down is going to be a key.
We've got to make smart decisions, especially on first down. The offensive play calling needs to be first rate this time. It needs to be the opposite of what we did against Clemson. Whatever we did against Clemson, we need to do the exact opposite in this game. Because you've got to keep Stidham from getting killed. If you let LSU into our backfield the way they did against Clemson, he's not going to make it out of halftime.
Nope. Next question is Bradley Weiss.
Okay.
Will the tenderizer ever be able to pound the rock again this season? Can he get to last year's form by November? And does he stick around for his senior year?
Well, we talked about that a little bit ago. We certainly hope so because, my gosh, it'll be beautiful if we ever can. But I really don't know. I hope. I was glad we had Delvin on to kind of explain what that's like because, my gosh, I have a lot more sympathy for Petway now than I did before. I didn't know what he had. Now I'm like, oh, my gosh. Good grief. I mean, I was wanting him to come back before this, but...
Well, I don't have facts to back this up.
But now I do. So I'm... Gosh.
Next question is from Neil Page. It's a similar topic. He says, last year it seemed Petway was better than Kerryon. This year it seems Kerryon's a better all-around back. What happened that made Kerryon made the jump? I love Kerryon, but he seems to be injury prone. Each play, it's like I'm waiting for him to get hobbled. Mm. Is my fear real or imagined? Who is the go-to guy if he goes down?
Mm. Kerryon, my wayward son.
I needed to do that all show, and I haven't done it. So, I totally agree. I mean, when my wife texted me when I was at Dragon Con that Kerryon was basically running the ball every play, I said, well, he's going to get hurt. And then she said he just got hurt. So, I think he's tougher now than he was in terms of being fragile. And he's certainly gotten well a lot faster than I expected from what he got, But I do worry tremendously, yeah.
I felt before the season he could really be the X factor on offense, and we talked about that in the Auburn preview episode. I think he could be the big play guy, and I think you're seeing that. Like that Saturday is what he can do. He can make people miss. He can be patient and read the holes, and I think he can really make a difference in the running game this offense. A year ago against LSU is the game that I'll never forget Kerryon playing when we had to have first downs.
He
took the ball up the middle and took a beating against them again and again and got first downs and that to win the game for Auburn. And he will have my never ending respect for that.
Absolutely. All right. Last couple of questions. If we got any more,
We got one or two more real quick here. This is from, CA Bush 11. He says, it's really early to ask this question, But I want to talk about this insanity before the possibility of it happening is eliminated by normal college football things. If Auburn was to make it to the college football playoff and championship, there's an outside chance the path from November looks like this. Georgia, Bama, Georgia, Clemson, Bama. On a scale of 1 to 10, how many years would that take off your life?
Oh, my goodness. It's true. That's true. Yeah, Georgia, Bama, Georgia, Georgia, Bama?
No, Georgia, Bama.
And then the SEC
Georgia
championship
again,
game, Georgia.
Title game. Clemson in the semifinal, Clemson. Bama again in the
oh,
final.
My gosh.
Yeah, that'd take about 10 years off my life.
Oh, man. We have to play every one of them twice.
All right, next question from Auburn Elvis, who I owe a humble apology to because he's been sending in questions and I missed him last week.
Oh, okay. Sorry, I remember this.
Assuming you can't change games' locations but could reorder them, what would have been Auburn's ideal schedule this year? How would you have shifted stuff around?
You know, honestly, I liked playing Clemson early. I don't think I would. I thought that playing another game and then playing Clemson second was really ideal. Obviously, it wasn't, but I think that would have, to me, although if you look at the way Clemson plays, they usually dip in the middle of the season. So you might want to play Clemson about sixth.
Fair.
You know, I've always said, I don't know, there's no good time to play Alabama. They're good at the beginning, they're good at the end. So, I don't know. Honestly, I think it's shaked up about as well as it was going to shake up.
And I do like, I've talked about it, I like, and I don't love this three-game road trip thing we're getting ready to do.
Yeah. That's the only thing.
I'd split that up and put one of the Mississippi schools in between there maybe, but.
I agree.
Right. Derek Roberts says, does Auburn's struggles to put away Ole Miss and Mississippi State concern you, or are you simply happy that we throttled an SEC opponent in an 11 a.m. game?
No, I think we've beaten that one to death. We're very happy, and we're not worried about the second half. That was the scrubs and everything, and they were trying harder, and we were trying less hard with fewer, lesser players, so I'm perfectly happy with it.
Yep.
All right, John, I got to run. Any final thoughts from you?
Real quick, somebody gave you props for saying that A&M was good, and I wanted to point that out.
Thank you. I appreciate that. I really do, because I've been seeing that all year, and I think they're going to win. That was my pick this week. I forgot who they're playing this week, but they're playing
at Florida.
They're going to beat Florida. A&M's going to beat Florida. That's my call. That is my
my cold dead hands.
Lock of the week.
All right, and on that note...
I like it.
All right, on that note, we got to run. Our time is up. We thank you for yours. War Eagle, John.
War Eagle, man.
Thanks for listening to the Wishbone Podcast. All past episodes are available at auwishbone.podbean.com and via iTunes. For more Auburn fun, join us on Facebook at facebook.com/auwishbone and follow the show on Twitter at auwishbone. War Eagle.
Becomes of you, my love. When they have finally stripped you off the handbags and the glad rags that your granddad had to sweat so you could buy.
This has been a White Rocket Entertainment production.
Thank you for listening to the AU Wishbone Podcast.
Go to bed.